Well, it's Tuesday morning again, and we get to explore some more of embracing His glory. I appreciate those of you who had some forbearance while I took some time off to enjoy the beauty of Sierras with Sarah and my family. The Central Sierras, I tell you, not just a place where my family vacationed growing up. It's a place I've engaged God often. It's not only family fun, it's all of that. It's also a chance to be refreshed in just the beauty of the creation and who God is and how God sets my heart at rest in that presence. But I'm back now, and so hopefully we'll keep this on course to get to a good end together, and hopefully it's helpful to those of you who are joining us for it. We're exploring 2 Corinthians 3, the language of Paul at the end of that chapter where he says, "But we all with unveiled faces, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image, from glory to glory, just as from the Lord, the Spirit." And we've been parsing that out, not in Paul's writings, we've actually been back in John, because there's some wonderful language in John as John contemplates who this Jesus is, what it is that he's offering, how it is that he engages that life. And I love that exploration because John's one of my heroes in this journey because of what he writes, not in his gospel, but what he writes in his letter, 1 John 4. He's an older man now. He's been on this journey multiple decades from what he learned in the Gospels to how he's lived it on his life and journey. And he gets to the end of his life, and he's talking about the love God has for us, and this is love, that not that we loved him, but that he first loved us. And then at the end of that, he says this. This is verse 16. "And so we know and rely." More specifically, the verb tenses there would be translated, "And so we have come to know and come to rely on the love God has for us." Man, that has been my journey these last 25, 26 years. It's been a lifetime journey, really, but so much of my life was caught up in the whole religious performance motif. And I was trying hard to be good for God. A lot of effort, a lot of knowledge, a lot of trying harder, a lot of that. And then began a bit of a different journey of learning to live loved, and He loves me, expresses that. Many of you have read that. I still get email from that regularly of people who are just discovering it and being transformed by some of that reading, which is fabulous. But that's kind of my tagline, what John says in 1 John 4, coming to know. I'm not the end of this journey yet. I'm coming to know and coming to rely. And where I come to know and come to rely on His love, man, life just makes sense. Even in the most bitter, hurtful moments, life makes sense. And where I don't rely on that love, when I instead rely on Wayne's intelligence or Wayne's activity or Wayne's performance or Wayne's wisdom or Wayne's something else, it's where stuff gets lost for me and things become more complicated. And the deep exhale, the relaxing comes when I come to know what His love is about in the situation I'm in and then find a way to rely on that love. That is so transformative to me. So we've been talking about it. And we've been exploring this process that Jesus describes, John 14, upper room talking to His disciples. And He talks about kind of a three-stage reality, or to behold, to come to know Him, to believe Him, and then to follow Him. That's kind of a, not a step one, two, three that we can intellectually make on our own and do in a weekend seminar somewhere, but that we begin with a posture of beholding Him. I want to know who this God is. I want to know Him as He really is. I want to behold His light and life, as John said in John 1, about we beheld His glory full of grace and truth. That's how I come to know Him. There's this beautiful mix inside Jesus that's never been expressed well theologically, because I don't think you can express it in principle. You see it in a person. And the things that have most transformed me, people ask all the time, what books have been most influential in your experience? And my answer is always, it's not books. It's been people. Been people down the road on the journey, and it's not just been listening to them teach, it's more importantly been watching how they live. And that watching how they live helps me understand, oh, I get how this works now. And I can learn to that same reality of learning to know and learning to rely. So beholding and believing, which is trusting, that not just, I don't just behold Him, but I, in the beholding, come to trust. And then in the trust, come to follow Him or obey Him. But obey is such a a religious word that I think puts our head in the wrong space. I think follows much more a relational reality. So we've been talking about how we behold him. And then as we behold him, he's going to poke holes in our illusions. Remember that? This has been the biggest part of the thing to me, because that's been a lot of my journey. God's poking holes. Jesus, the Holy Spirit, poking holes in my illusions. And for a long time, I would just, you know, there's a hole in my illusion, and get the duct tape out and fix it, or, you know, nail some wood over it. It's been trying to ignore the hole, because the hole almost always, you know, we have our pretensions because they comfort something in us. And they can be coping mechanism. They can't just be lies. They can't be misunderstandings. But when Jesus comes and pokes that hole, he invites us to follow. Come follow me. And it's in the following that the transformation happens. I mean, so many people who talk about the love of God, which is great. I love the love of God, but it's like the love of God is just there, so everything wonderful is going to happen in your life because God loves you. No, the loving in your life is so that you'll come to know and that you'll come to trust. And then when he pokes holes in your illusions, you'll follow. And the transformation is in the following. The transformation is not in duct taping over the hole and staying inside of whatever coping mechanism or lie or misunderstanding I have, because it comforts me. It makes my life seem easy. It lures me in with promise of helping me and then doesn't. And I actually think these three things, beholding, believing, following, are really not so much steps we have to take. I think they're automatic reflections. In other words, if I behold God as he really is, I'll believe him. Because knowing who he is, knowing his love, knowing his truth, knowing his weight of reality in the universe, he's got all the best stuff. So then when he says something, I'm wanting to learn to believe that. Believe above what I see. I believe above what I want to be true, to believe it. And then if you believe it and he's with you, you'll follow it. These are natural progressions. You get the beholding right, the believing will follow. You get the believing, then you're going to find yourself following, because that's the only way to do it. One of the verses that captured me from a very young age, it's from Revelation 14 in a book that I didn't often read as a young man, because it's so much in there, you go, I have no idea what's going on here. It's still a favorite book of mine, because it speaks about the ultimate triumph of God in the brokenness of our world. It speaks to that. But in Revelation 14, it's speaking of the 144,000. It says a lot of things about them. This phrase caught my attention even as a young man. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Or as I read it back in the day, they followed the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. I was real fluent in the King Jimmy back in that day, so I could read that King James stuff and know what it meant. But something about that, I remember being young, like in my teens, where somehow that phrase got into my soul, to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Not as, oh crud, I have to do that to be pleasing to God, but as the greatest adventure life could possibly offer. To be with the Lamb and to follow him wherever he goes and to see what sorts out. That's been a driving desire of my heart and life. It has been. Now, I've not always done it well. Oh, there's times that I've followed Wayne's idea of things and Wayne's desire for just enjoyment and pleasure and doing what I think is going to serve me better than whatever. I've not lived this perfectly, still don't. But I am learning. I am learning. And there's a hunger in my heart wherever I hear that phrase or when I'm just praying and talking to Jesus about it. I want to follow you wherever you're going today. I want to follow you. So help me behold, help me see where you're going. And then when I see where you're going, help me have enough trust in what you're doing. And ultimately, just trust in you, that I am actually believing that if you're going that way, that's the best of all ways to go, no matter how scary it looks, no matter how much it puts at risk, that I'm actually ready to go with whatever it is that you want me to do and experience the life of God as it makes himself known in the reality of our world. And this to me is the joy of this journey. And yet in Christendom, and I mean the religion that is Christianity, I don't mean real following Jesus, we've provided a lot of substitutes for that. We tell people to follow the religious traditions or follow the rules or follow our standard of ethics that we've derived from the Bible. So here are the things to follow, which is ultimately putting us back under the law. Or as many people say, you know, we need to follow the Bible. The Bible says this, the Bible says that. We need to follow that. We need to implement it. The problem with that is that we're only following our own interpretations of the Bible. Jesus never told us to follow his ethics. He didn't tell us to follow the Bible. He did ask us to follow him. Come follow me. And in the following of him as a relational reality, following him isn't something we do by finding a list of good priorities to experience or a list of good ethics to follow, as important as good ethics are. The reason why Jesus gave us things that are sinful and gave us things that are fruitful is because he wants us to be fruitful, and he wants us to see that sin actually leads us to dark places. No matter how fun it might seem for a moment, it will drag you into the darkness. So it's always that choice between temporary joy, temporary ease, temporary comfort, and following the Lamb into real ease, real comfort, real freedom. And it may be through down a bit of a dark road where that happens. So Jesus didn't say, listen, I'm going to send you religious leaders and they will guide you into all truth. He didn't say, I will send you articulate writers and they will guide you into all truth. He didn't say, I will send you a book and it will lead you into all truth. He said, I'll send you my spirit. Because he actually wants us to learn to follow him. I've been writing a bit on my blog about this song that and it's not a real song because I don't know the melody. I've never heard the song. It's a metaphor, right? That there's a song of God's heartbeat, God's rhythm that courses through the creation, that courses in the air around you. And when you pause enough to hear it, let your heart tune to it. Let the rhythms of your life, what Eugene Peterson called in Matthew 11, the unforced rhythms of grace. When you discover that pace, what I said after coming back from Virginia a year or so ago, life moves at the speed of relationships, which is very slow. And the first relationship is his, of course. And then dealing with life around me is in the speed of relationships and watching how that unfolds. And when I live inside that pacing, that rhythm, that melody, that tune, man, life makes sense. I see him so much more clearly, and it's not always easy to follow. There's always challenges to following. Like we talked about, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free, but as I've always said, it will mess with you first. Because when you see the truth, it's like, oh my gosh, my expression, as I said before, I don't want that to be true. I would rather something else be true because that's going to challenge me. Why wouldn't it? Not because God likes challenging us or testing us, but why wouldn't wisdom that transcends ours invite us into different space? And a God who's with us that we can trust would put us in a framework that we could respond to him, not thinking about, well, how's this going to work out for me? And do I have enough energy, strength, wisdom, whatever to get through that? But just simply, he's with me, he's enough. And when I'm in that song and in that rhythm, following him is the best of all things to do. And letting my illusions be challenged is fabulous. I've watched that over my vacation in some secular ways that our country, I referred to in the podcast that we did last time about how our media is intentionally distorted for ratings. And so they're not even trying to bring us the truth anymore. And that's every bit of media out there, including social media, who are campaigning for likes and ratings and views and going viral. And I get people send me stuff, hey, let's help make this go viral. Don't realize you're playing a game that isn't Jesus's game. That's not what he's asked us to be a part of. Jesus can make anything go viral in the world, not on YouTube or Facebook or Instagram, because his spirit speaks it into the heart of his people. And if you're encouraging that voice in people's heart, if you're encouraging them to recognize and see that song, that tune, that reality, and live in it, then that's where life takes on meaning. So I love John 10. John 10 is all about my sheep know my voice. A stranger they will not follow. When we know his voice, strangers' voices just seem sick. And illusions just seem that. When I watch people have an illusion exposed, like some of these big time people resigning from major media outlets and exposing what's going on there, you notice how quick everybody covers up again. It's so quick. Yeah, they were just disgruntled employee. They just cover up and keep doing the same thing. Doesn't matter what gets exposed. It happens that way because it's profitable. And so who cares? Truth be damned. Reality be tossed aside. We're just trying to make money and hold on to our thing here. And yeah, I'm that cynical about most media outlets. Even most ministries, quite frankly, are about making money, keeping people dependent. And when somebody pokes a hole in the illusion, see, when someone gets caught in a sexual indiscretion, in a financial problem, whatever, how quickly do we just cover up, oh, it's a bad apple in the barrel, blah, blah, blah. We don't let it see that in the actual environment in which we are seeking to let the life of Jesus thrive, it doesn't work there. Because that's all about increasing our dependency and following something or someone instead of following him. My sheep know my voice. They'll follow me. A stranger they will not follow. And yet we have so many people following the voices of strangers. And I see it all the time. I do. I see it sometimes people reacting to a post that I've done or something like that. And they have this illusion about life. And when I poke a hole in it, they come back at me, name-calling, angry, whatever. I just go, oh my gosh, I poked a hole in somebody's little network. The more you behold him, the more you believe him, the easier it is to see illusions, the easier it is to have that thing inside that kind of quivers when you hear a stranger's voice. It may even look enticing what they're asking of you, but you know it's going to lead you into a darker place. They just know it. Because that's what the stranger's voice is. He comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy. Jesus said, I come to give you life, that you would have it more abundantly. And that's what he wants for us. And when he invites us to follow, he said, come follow me. I'm the door of the sheep. I will lead you out. I will find safe pasture. Ezekiel 33, where the prophet condemns the unworthy shepherds who have just fleeced the flock and used them for their own gain and muddied the waters, got the benefits out and left the sheep little in return. So much of it, if you want to go back and read Ezekiel 33, describes not only the religion of Israel's day, it uncovers the religion of ours. There's much in that that does. At the end of it, the prophet says this from God's lips, I will send my own prophet. He will lead and guide you. In other words, I will be. And he sends Jesus. And when you're following any other person, theological construct, tradition, other than following him, you go right back into the illusions that Jesus wants to set you free of. His desire is that you learn to follow him, that you not recognize the voice of a stranger. When you do, you just go, not going that way. And that increasingly, the things Jesus is doing and the things he's saying becomes endearing. Like that phrase from a young man, to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Every time I hear that, my heart is captured. I want to follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And sometimes that's, as many of you write me, sometimes that's pretty lonely. You follow the Lamb wherever he goes, and it's not what you thought. You're not, boy, I thought people, when I started down this journey and discovering some of the things I discovered 25 years ago, I thought the world would beat a path to my door. And it doesn't. Jesus talks about it being a narrow road, and he says to Isaiah, I want you to go tell Israel this. And Isaiah says, how long, O Lord? And God's answer is, till everyone in Israel rejects you. Now, I don't have a rejection complex, because I meet many people on this journey who, on a similar trajectory that my life is, I'm enriched by that, blessed by that, touched by that. But I also meet people in the early stages of this when you've kind of been in religion all your life and you're pushing away from religious performance and all the voices in your life think you're becoming apostate and they're telling you what a horrible person you are and you need to get back on the straight and narrow. All that stuff. It's a very scary time in life, but I remember as a young man, we used to sing a chorus. It was about following Jesus. One of the verses was this, though none go with me, still, I will follow. I remember singing that as a young man and thinking, man, yes, even if it's alone, man, I'm going to follow you. And there was something about that phrasing that was endearing. And yet the places in my life where I've actually had to do that, though none go with me, still I will follow. I don't take my following from the crowd. I don't take it from what other people are doing. I take it from him as best I can. And I seek confirmation of that in other people who know him, who are trusting him to expose their illusions. I'm not alone in this journey, not by a long stretch. But there have been moments when the next choice was something that alienated people from me that I had learned to trust and love and rely on, and their disapproval was a huge challenge. And then I hear that little chorus, though none go with me, still I will follow. Though none go with me, still I will follow. To behold, to believe, and to follow. That's the process of transformation. And you won't follow until you trust, and you won't trust until you behold. So don't start with following. Start with beholding. And if you start there, eventually, you'll find yourself following. And though it may be tough at times, like every person I meet on this journey and ask him, when they talk about those tough moments of following Jesus beyond an illusion that they found dear to them, I'll ask them, was it worth it? In the moment, they might have said, I don't think this is worth it. Always 2 or 3 years down the road, oh, yes. Wouldn't have traded how this turned out for anything. And that's following. And that's at the heart of any journey that's seeking to be transformed.